But what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about, we're going to look at the life of Peter. So we're going through a series now. We had the first one last week with Stanley. He kicked us off. And we're going to be looking at encounters with Jesus. So we're going to be looking at different people in the Bible and how they how their lives were changed as they encountered Jesus. And the reason that I was sort of mentioning about learning languages is because I chose the sort of easy path. There was something I tried... I tried French, that wasn't really working for me, so I went with German. But actually, maybe in hindsight, maybe I should have gone for the French. But because, you know, it wasn't working so well, I went the other way. But we're gonna look at the life of Peter. And Peter's a really amazing guy. He had lots of different encounters with Jesus. He was with Jesus for about 3 years during what's sort of often called his public ministry. And we're going to look at a couple of points. We're going to look at sort of right at the very beginning, when he first met Jesus. And then we're going to come back to him right at the end, just before Jesus went back to be with his Father in heaven, and look at really how his life had changed over that period of time, how him meeting Jesus had shaped his life. So, as I mentioned last week, we heard from Stanley in the first of our encounter series, and he encouraged us to plug in and switch on.
Yeah.
But sometimes we don't plug in and switch on. So through looking at Peter's life, I think we can think of some of the reasons why Peter didn't necessarily plug in and switch on. Why he maybe went the other course, why he shied away or backed off, or where he went headstrong in with his own ideas and things like that. So who was Peter? He was one of the disciples. He was one of the sort of pillars of the early church. He's one of the sort of a special group of disciples. And he was probably the most outspoken of all of them. He got into trouble. He sort of went and said stuff and just sort of first thing that comes into his head, blah. Don't know if anyone here can associate with that. I can sometimes myself think, oh, I should have thought about that one first. So an example of that is when Jesus was talking about the fact he needed to die. And Peter was like, die? Hang on, no, I think you've got the wrong idea, Jesus. Don't want to do that. You know, if you're dead, you know, things don't work out well. And Jesus very swiftly sort of took him inside and said, actually, no, you know, get behind me, Satan. You know, he didn't mince his words. But, you know, he quickly corrected that. Peter was also, you know, back in one of the examples of what he was doing is there was a big storm. The disciples were out on a lake. And Jesus, they saw Jesus walking on the water. And Peter's like, right, jump out of the boat. Start walking along to Jesus. And he starts thinking. He was the first person to act. He did things without necessarily thinking about it. So he's a really interesting character because Jesus chose him with this special thing. He'd given this special job. He was called a rock. We'll see in a minute how his name was Simon. And Jesus called him Peter. He's not the most rock-like person. He doesn't think about what he's doing. He's kind of a little bit... You know, you wouldn't want to, what's he going to do now? He's not a rock-like person, but Jesus said, no, you are a rock.
That's good.
Where are we? Good. So we're going to kick off by looking at Luke 5, and we're also going to look at John 1. So if you've got your Bible with you, feel free to turn to them. The words are going to come up here, as you can see, and we're reading from the English Standard Version. Where am I? Catch up. Okay, so... I'll read it out. So on one occasion, while the crowd was pressing in on him being Jesus, to hear the word of God, Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret. This lake is given many names in the Bible. It's important because we'll come back to it later. It's sometimes called the Sea of Galilee, the Lake of Galilee, something else as well. But just remember that little thing. He's at this particular lake. So then Jesus goes out in one of the boats and he does a preach. And at the end of it, when Jesus has finished speaking, he said to Simon, now Simon is the guy that we're going to talk about today. He's going to be called Peter in a minute. He said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered him, Master, we toiled, we worked all night long and we took nothing. But at your word, we'll go out and we'll let down our nets. Now I think Peter's thinking here, there's going to be an I told you so coming on in a minute. Anyway. And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish. Their nets were breaking. They signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and they filled both boats so that they began to sink. But when Simon Peter saw it, he fell down at Jesus' knees saying, Depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. For he and all who were with him were astonished at the catch of fish they had taken. And so were James and John, the sons of Zebedee. They were the partners of Peter. He had a fishing business and they were They were also disciples, but they were sort of in this fishing business with him, who were partners with Simon. And Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. From now on, you will be catching men." And when they had brought their boats to land, they left everything and followed him. So there's a number, there's loads of really interesting things in the Bible. If you don't remember anything else, remember that. But I just want to sort of pull out a few of them. Simon is a fisherman. This is his job. This is his bread and butter. He's got this business with these other two guys. And he's sort of being told to, you know, how to do his fishing by Jesus. You know, if he wasn't good at fishing, he wouldn't still be doing it. He'd be off doing something else or would be starving. But he's doing all right for himself as a fisherman. And this Jesus guy tells him, like, go out and let down your nets. So that was one thing that I thought was quite interesting. And he actually listened to him, which is good. The other thing, after the miracle had happened, Simon was like, oh my goodness. When he saw how great Jesus was, how amazing he was, how holy he was, he then thought, right, how, I can't be with you. I've got to run away. I can't be here. The thing is, he's up to his knees in fish in a boat in the middle of a lake, so he can't go anywhere. But he's like, Jesus, you leave me. I'm not getting out of the boat at the moment. And then Jesus said to him, the way that he responded, he said, don't be afraid. So, I mean, I don't know what everyone's, you know, thinking today. I don't know where you are. But Jesus would say to you, if you're feeling like, hang on, I need to get out of here. This is, you know, all a bit too much. Jesus would say, do not be afraid. And not just that, I've got a purpose for you. I've got a calling.
That's right.
So the next bit, so as part of this sort of early encounter that Simon had with Jesus, that Simon Peter had with Jesus, this is when Jesus gives him a name. So in John 1:42 it says, he brought him. So Simon's been dragged along by his brother, who's another one of the, I think it's Andrew, I think. He's been dragged along by his brother. And Jesus looks at Peter and says, so you are Simon, the son of John. You shall be called Cephas, which means Peter. So here's where he gives him a new name. I'm going to make all my point. Okay, here we go. So first of all, there's a few things that can be a barrier to us plugging in and switching them to God, from us getting the most of what he's got for us. I think the first one that we can sort of pull out of this story is his, you know, Peter was quite self-assured. He wasn't like a shy person. He wasn't, you know, worried about what he was going to be doing. So when he was asked to, you know, go out into the deep, put down your nets, he's thinking, no, that's not going to work. I've been doing that all night. There's no fish there. So he had a reluctance to obey there. But he obeyed anyway, which is good. So I think there's a lesson for us there. You know, God might ask you to do something, but are you going to choose to obey, or are you going to sort of sit back and think, hang on, no, I know best, God, you've got it wrong. Never the right answer. Separately, then there's anxiety. So after Jesus did this miracle, after they had all of these fish, Peter's reaction is, you know, he could have gone two ways, but his reaction is, oh no, I'm not worthy. He started looking at himself, looking inward. Whereas actually what we need to do is we need to look outward and we need to look to Jesus.
Yes.
As he starts looking inward, that's when he started sinking in the water, when he was walking on the water to get to Jesus. But when he's looking outward, when he fixes his eyes on Jesus, that's when you stay on top. So then the obedience is what released the miracle. So had he have not gone out into the deep water, had he had not gone out and put out his nets in obedience, he wouldn't have got any fish. So, yeah. I think that's what I was going to say on that one. So what have we got next? Where am I? Okay, so if we now move on to a little bit later, this is now coming towards the end of Jesus' ministry. So Jesus has been going around with these disciples for 3 years. And what is interesting is he keeps coming back to these same few lessons for Peter, keeps wanting to remind him of these same things. But this is now just after the Last Supper. So they'd shared this meal together. Jesus has said, right, I'm going to go now. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to die. And the disciples, he also says, one of you is going to betray me. So they start having this discussion, like, who's it going to be? I reckon it's him over there. No, it's going to be them. Having this discussion about who's going to betray them. And then it turns into a discussion about, oh, no, actually, I'm better than you. I'm a bit better than you. And they're having this discussion about who's the greatest. Now, Jesus just said he's going to die and be taken away from them. And they're having a discussion about who's the greatest. Jesus is very patient. And then it comes to this bit here. So Jesus also shared about how there's a spiritual battle going on, and a spiritual battle going on for the disciples, about how Satan has come to him, and this, it's a bit reminiscent of Job, when Satan has come to Jesus and said, I want these disciples, they're mine. And Jesus is saying, let's read it. So Luke 22:32, but I have prayed for you that in your faith you may not fail. And when you have turned again, so this bit, I've prayed for you that your faith may not fail. So that he's using a few different words for you. So Satan had come and demanded all of the disciples, and Jesus is now saying something specifically about Peter. I've prayed for you, Peter, that your faith may not fail. And when you have turned again, so this is just before he's about to go through a bit of a trial. So he's gonna mess up. But when you've turned again, I want you to strengthen your brothers. I want you, the guy who's gonna mess up, to be the one to strengthen everyone else.
That's right, come on.
So Peter said to him, Lord, I'm ready to go with you, both to prison and to death. So this is Peter being Peter. This is Peter saying, hang on, no, I can do this. I'm ready, I am with you, Jesus. I'm gonna go to prison, I'm gonna go to death. There's nothing that's gonna get in the way. And Jesus says, I tell you the truth. I tell you, Peter, the cock will not crow this day until you deny me three times that you know me. So Peter's here thinking, well, what's going on? Okay, I've just got to get through this day. He's told me how I'm going to mess up. Right, hang on. If somebody tells me, right, today, Steve, you're going to mess up in this particular way, I'll be like, right, I'm going to be really careful. But anyway, so many of us may know the story. What happens is Jesus is then taken away. He is trialed. He is crucified. And at the same time, the disciples are sort of scattered. They're all sort of like going, oh, what's going on? Jesus has told them this is going to happen, but somehow it hasn't sort of clicked with them. Peter's being asked by a number of different people, aren't you the guy who we saw with Jesus? And he's like, hang on, this isn't going to end well. No, that's not me. He does it three times. The cock crows. He realizes what he's done. He remembers what Jesus said. And he's like, oh, no. He goes away weeping. So where we're going to pick up the story now is after Jesus has been raised from the dead. So Jesus has done his thing. He's appeared to the disciple a couple of times, and now we sort of pick up in the last chapter of John. So this is right at the end of the Gospels. And I'll just read this. So after Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias, and Tiberias is, this is back at that same sea, the Sea of Galilee. All these different towns around there, some people call it different things. If it's your town, you call it the Sea of your town. But the Sea of Tiberias, same as the Sea of Galilee. And he revealed himself to Jesus, he revealed himself in this way. So Jesus is revealing himself to the disciples. And it's John, who's writing this, is highlighting the way that he reveals himself is important. So Simon Peter, Thomas, called the twin, Nathanael of Cana in Galilee, and the sons of Zebedee, and two others of his disciples were together. So Simon Peter, he's the sort of bullshy guy, he's like, they're all sitting around, nothing much is happening. He says, I'm going fishing. He's the first to act again. They said to him, we'll go with you. They went out and got into the boat, but that night they caught nothing. So this is exactly the same as right back at the beginning, when they'd gone out fishing, nothing. Just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore. Yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? They answered him, no. He said to them, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they weren't able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. The disciple who Jesus loved, now John refers to himself as the disciple of Jesus. He had great, identity in Christ, read John. He's got it now. The disciple that Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. The other disciples came in the boat, dragging the net full of fish, for they weren't far from land, but about 100 yards off. Okay, sorry, I'm just catching up. Okay, so let's carry on. So when they got out on the land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Jesus said to them, "Bring some of the fish that you have just caught." So Simon Peter went aboard, hauled the net ashore full of large fish, 153 of them. And although there were so many, the net was not torn. Jesus said to them, "Come and have breakfast." Now none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" for they knew it was the Lord. Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to them, and so with the fish. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, John is pointing out where this is happening. He's pointing out that this is a repetition of the same or very similar miracle to what Jesus did right back at the beginning. So I think he's trying to remind Peter, remind all of them, but I think particularly Peter, of what he was telling him at that first time, about the fact that he needs to rely on Jesus, that even though he's doing fishing, which is his thing, he needs to rely on Jesus, that even though he might be now feeling really inadequate, aware of his sin, so he's just denied Jesus three times, he's probably feeling pretty rubbish. You know, he even got a forewarning it was going to happen, he still couldn't stop it. So he's feeling pretty down, but, you know, he needs to rely on Jesus. He needs to turn to Jesus. So as we continue reading, they share breakfast. So let's carry on again. Wrong way. So when they finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Peter said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Feed my lambs." Jesus said to him a second time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter replied, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." He said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Peter was grieved because he had said to him a third time, "Do you love me?" And Peter replied, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." So I think this is interesting. When I first read this, I was thinking, that's kind of a bit harsh. Yeah, he's messed up, but he sort of, you know, it seemed a little bit like, you know, Jesus is sort of rubbing it in. But I think as I read it and prayed about it a little bit more, actually what sort of struck me is the fact that, you know, I think it was, you know, Jesus trying to lovingly restore him back into where he was meant to be. Each time he said, "Do you love me?" Each time Peter replied. So what you don't necessarily get here is the fact that Jesus was saying, "Do you love me?" in the kind of way that Jesus was saying before he had denied Jesus. He was saying, you know, "I'm going to go with you to the death. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go to prison with you." Jesus is now saying, "Do you love me in that way? Do you love me more than these disciples?" Because Peter was saying, you know, these lot all might fall away. I'm going to stick with you. So Jesus is now asking him that same question. And Peter, having messed up, is replying in a lesser way. He's saying, "Oh, you know, I love you like I love a good friend." He's sort of saying, you know, I can't say that anymore. And Jesus is saying, okay, well, even though you can't get to the level of love that I have demanded of you, I've still got a job for you. Feed my lambs, tend my sheep. Yeah. And the last time Jesus asks him, you know, for that level that he was able to sort of commit to. So Peter was saying, you know, I philos you is the Greek word for love. We've only got the one word for love in English. Whereas Jesus is using two words, agape, which is that total commitment, and then philos, which is more like a deep friendship. I know this because I Googled it, not because I know Greek. I think it's interesting that Jesus then sort of lowers the bar. Peter was the one who went to Jesus and said, I'm up here, I'm going with you no matter what. And Jesus lowers the bar back down to where he's ready. So I think, you might be feeling like, hang on, Jesus, you're asking something too much of me. He doesn't need you to, you know, go all out there. He can work with you wherever you're at. And Jesus doesn't change what he wanted Peter to do, depending on how, you know, Peter's failure. Jesus said, no, I can work with you. I'm going to give you my spirit. We're going to do this. You're not like a solid person, but you're my rock. I think it's just really, really, really encouraging. So, yeah, I think what is also amazing is actually how this then changes Peter, how then he goes on to live. You can read in Acts 4, Acts 5 about how Peter preaches the first sermon and like thousands of people are saved. That then comes to the attention of the Jewish authorities and they're like, hang on, we need to do something about them, because if all of these people are believing Jesus is, you know, is God, and they're following these disciple people, then they're going to turn on us. They're going to kick us out. They're going to, you know, lynch us or something. So they were like, okay, we need to deal with these disciples. So what happens is the disciples go and round up the disciples. They round up Peter, and they say to him, okay, we're going to kill you if you don't stop saying this. They've beaten them. They've, you know, imprisoned them. And Peter's response now, compared to Peter's response, you know, when he was denying Jesus, is just light and day. So Peter's like, Peter says, who should we obey? Should we obey man or should we obey God? He preaches to them and he sort of condemns them for what they have done. But then, so he just doesn't hold back. He is now doing what Jesus originally asked. He's now showing that total commitment and devotion. So, just in summary, I've got my summary slide. I think some of the lessons that we can draw from the life of Peter are, there's a number of things that can get in the way of us plugging in and switching on. We can be too confident in our own abilities, and that can lead us to think, right, God, I don't need you. How much better would our lives be if we were to say, right, okay, you know, I'm confident about this, whatever I'm doing, but God, I invite you in. God, what do you want me to be doing? Yeah. Where might there be a miracle in your life this week where you feel like, yeah, I've got this covered, you know, it's okay, God. But if you say, actually, God, what do you want me to be doing? Where could I partner with you in this? What could you be doing with me? Similarly, or oppositely, conversely, where you feel inadequate, maybe you've tried something before. Maybe you've tried speaking to your friends about Jesus. Maybe you've, you know, we heard this really encouraging testimony from Alameda at the beginning about how she shared with her faith and brought two people to Jesus. Now, I don't know, I should have asked you this before. Have you ever shared your faith with someone and, you know, they're not giving their lives to Jesus? Had a not so good reaction?
Even yesterday.
Yeah, even yesterday, there you go. So if every time we had a knockback or a setback, if we said, okay, I'm not doing that again, hang on, I've not got this right, this isn't my skill, I'll leave that to Alameda, she's great at this sort of stuff. Now, if we all felt like that, no, you know, we wouldn't be doing anything. You'd be missing out on something. If Peter had, when he got back to the shore, when he was feeling, oh my, you know, this is a holy teacher, you know, he hadn't maybe twigged he was the Son of God yet, but he thought, like, this guy's too holy for me, I need to get out of here, I'm a sinful guy. If he'd run away, if he'd hightailed it out of there, then, you know, he would have, you know, the gospel would be different. But yeah, he would have missed out on so much. So I think, you know, don't let inadequacy get in the way. Don't let your feelings of your own ability get in the way, because it's not you, it's God.
Come on.
And then finally, last point is obedience releases a miracle. So whether you're feeling like you've got it covered, whether you're feeling like, no way can I do this, it's actually stepping out, it's actually being obedient, it's actually doing it that will lead to the miracle. So, last challenge I wanted to leave you with is, what are you going to do this week?
Yeah.
Where are you going to let God in this week that's going to release a miracle in your life?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Brilliant.